Suicide is the 10th leading cause of death in the United States, and one of just three such causes on the rise. According to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, suicides have been increasing in every state, claiming nearly 45,000 Americans in 2016. The nationwide increase is 25% over 1999. The increase in Michigan is 33% and tends to skew north. As no single factor accounts for all suicides, the latest CDC report recommends that states take a comprehensive public health approach to suicide prevention, coordinating with virtually every sector of society to address the range of contributing factors. We'll look at what's being done in the Upper Peninsula, the state's role in suicide prevention, and ours, just ahead on Media Meet. Welcome to WNMU's Media Meet. I'm Bill Hart. Our guests are Marquette County Health Department health educator Sarah Derwin, Pathways Community Mental Health Outpatient Services Supervisor Ashley Genema, and Dial Help Rural Coordinator Christine Putz. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
We noted that the CDC recommends a public health approach to suicide prevention. Most associate public health with things like communicable diseases. Now, what are the centers saying, and what does it mean for public health departments?
So one unique feature of public health is that we really try to look at population health. So sometimes it can come up with immunizations, just large swaths of our area and our people, and how can we bring down, in some cases, disease, infection. So some of the similarities of looking at suicide prevention is that we tend to look at very large amounts of people and how can we make an impact with that. So it really is a good fit for public health to be working in suicide prevention.
From the other organizations represented here, how do you understand your role in the growing push to address suicide?
I mean, I think at Pathways, our main role is really to be on the front lines, assessing, helping families and individuals to manage their risk factors, to find appropriate treatment, to really get connected to the services that they need to get through their suicidal crisis and be able to live their most full life.
Okay. Christine, you're right at the barricades.
Yeah. So at Dial Help, we operate a crisis line 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We also do texting and instant messaging. So what we would be doing in suicide prevention and intervention is talking with folks that aren't sure where to go and connecting them with resources like community mental health or something like that. And also, sometimes this can be a really intimidating topic and people aren't sure, is this what I'm looking at? I'm really concerned about myself. I'm really concerned about a friend. And we're kind of a place that you can just go with some anonymity and just talk about how you're feeling and how your person you might be working with is impacting you too. And we can get you connected with those resources across the Upper Peninsula.
Okay. Around 2014, the Marquette County Suicide Prevention Alliance was formed. What can you tell us about the alliance, some of its activities, and where it is now?
Well, we know we've been doing suicide prevention initiatives and activities in this area for a long time, but I think it was just a matter of knowing how well our agencies work together, knowing that we were all kind of, it just impacted all of our programs, our activities, our initiatives. So we wanted to kind of formalize that a little bit and get as many agencies and sectors represented all at the table. Okay. So I can honestly say it was a pretty easy ask for a lot of agencies to say, does suicide or people in suicidal crisis impact you or your clients that you serve? And we got a lot of different agencies at the table.
Okay. I know Dial Help in Houghton launched a similar coalition in 2010, a follow-up services program in 2013, and then staged the very first UP Suicide Prevention Conference in 2016. Pathways also has contributed to such efforts. A lot of people have been pulling toward the same ends. How do you coordinate things among your groups?
I mean, I think we spend a lot of time at the table with our coalitions, with just reaching out to one another, really trying to work together to access each individual organization's niche and utilize, you know, the services in our rural community as well as we can. Okay. Because, you know, it is hard to access services sometimes.
Sure.
Or find, you know, the expert that we need for a certain situation. But I think because we are so rural in the UP, we do a really good job of just finding our partners and sticking together with that. So
okay.
We've been pretty collaborative with funding. You know, we realize when we receive some type of funding that I can look and say, dial help, you are the experts in this area of crisis and hotline numbers. So instead of, you know, my agency trying to figure out a program that would work well with a crisis center, you know, we collaborate with funding too. Same with pathways, you know, your mental health experts, which, you know, me being in public health, I'm not. So it's really easy to go to these other agencies and say, let's work together.
Okay. In September of 2017, the second UP Suicide Prevention Conference was held. What are the issues and topics that seem to have topped the list in these last couple of conferences?
For our last couple of conferences, the feedback I got from the participants of the conference was they wanted more information on intervention. How can I help someone?
Yeah.
What can I do as a community member to get someone connected to services? And also a lot of the feedback, because I think there's been a push around veterans, a lot of folks in our community, we have a high population of veterans in the Upper Peninsula too, and folks do want to know how to get those veterans connected with services and what am I looking for? How can I help someone?
Okay. The Marquette County Health Department is in the third year, I understand, of a youth suicide prevention project. Is that correct?
Okay.
Paid for on a grant from the State Health Department's Injury and Violence Prevention Unit. It began with a pilot program in the Child and Adolescent Health Centers of Gwynn and Ishpeming Middle and High Schools. What were the goals and how is that going?
So it was one of the initiatives of our grant that we're currently working on, just wrapping up our third year. And we wanted to pick two areas of focus. The main focus of our grant that we received through the state and then also through a federal grant called the Garrett Lee Smith Grant was we were looking at a rural area and what can work good in rural areas. So we went with Gwynn and Ishpeming because we have our adolescent school-based clinics there.
Okay.
And we know those clinics are both staffed with MSW social workers that provide counseling to students. So it's kind of an enhanced service that they provide at those two schools. So one decision we had is if we were going to do work in these two communities, that we were able to possibly provide those extra services if we're identifying youths who might be in a suicidal crisis.
Yeah.
Do we have adequate counseling or do we have a place to kind of get them in if they needed that? So we started working in those two communities and also working with the community outside of school.
Mm-hmm.
So what other areas do they have? Law enforcement, EMS, community groups, senior centers, and trying to bring all those folks at a table in a very small community.
How's that working out?
It's working out great. The schools have both adopted a comprehensive suicide prevention and postvention policy, which is fantastic. It includes training for staff, for students, giving teachers kind of a guide map of what to do if they're worried about a student, giving that administration a guide map of what to do in a postvention situation. So just giving a lot of guidance of the whole topic around prevention and postvention. So we've heard really great feedback from both of the schools.
It can be a difficult topic to talk about. The latest broad education effort from the Marquette County Health Department and Suicide Prevention Alliance is a documentary entitled Time to Talk, which has been aired on Public TV 13, or will have been by the time this airs. The film features local suicide loss survivors, as well as an attempted suicide survivor, and it discusses signs of potential suicides and resources available in a crisis. How did that documentary come about, and what are your hopes for it?
So our hopes with the documentary is having something local here, that when folks watch it from here, that they have something that they can identify with.
Mm-hmm.
There's some very unique features in the film that you can tell that it's filmed in the UP with folks that are from the UP. We wanted to have that message of hope, and we worked really closely with La Dolce to make sure that they followed all the best guidelines and that we were able to leave people with tools and hopefully resources that they're able to use with it.
Okay. The documentary begins with possible signs of a crisis, Teenager gives his baseball glove to a friend saying he won't need it anymore. Feel free to, you know, to speak to any of this that, you know, you have any experience with or comments on. What would be an obvious sign of suicide to most people? What are the some other potential signs, and how do we come to recognize them? I guess what I'm saying here is the baseball glove thing, is that something that people would ordinarily recognize as a sign of suicide, do you think? It's something you've sort of got to build a lot of awareness into.
Do you want to speak to this a little bit?
I think one of the reasons we used it in the documentary is it's not such an obvious sign.
Okay.
That a young man is giving away a possession to who we assume is a friend, someone important in his life, and that could be missed. And not, gee, why are you giving me this? So we wanted to put that in there to kind of show that it could be a subtle sign, that it could be someone giving away possessions. Those of us who do the work, we know someone giving away possession could definitely be a sign of suicide, but not everyone knows that.
Yeah.
So it's part of the education piece in that documentary that we wanted to bring that up so that people did understand that that could be a sign of someone having a suicidal crisis.
Okay. A tragic thing illustrated in the film is that family members of the victims still find themselves asking, as you mentioned here, what did I miss? You know, it's not always easy to answer that question, even in hindsight. It seems that suicide is rarely predicted in such settings. So how do we know when it's time to talk?
I mean, I think that anytime we have a concern about a friend or a loved one or even an acquaintance, it's important that we address that, whether that's through a referral source or through just asking the questions, you know, really coming to them and saying, you know, are you feeling suicidal? That's an okay thing to say when we're upset or when we're worried about somebody or we're seeing somebody that's upset. You know, I think we talk about signs that are missed or we talk about things like, you know, in hindsight, what could we have done differently? There's a lot of signs of suicide, and I think that it's hard to know each individual case, you know, but getting that professional help, asking those questions directly is really important, and we do have those resources in our community. I think Dial Help is the perfect example.
But you're
of
saying
that.
The sign is not the same in every context.
Absolutely not.
So that's important to note, too. Mental health conditions are often seen as a cause of suicide. That's understandable, but the CDC report says 54% of people who died by suicide in 2016 did not have a known mental health condition. Nonetheless, you know, you mentioned in the film signs of depression that are often identified. Isn't that a condition requiring treatment, or have I got too broad a view of depression there?
I mean, I think that depression, when we're talking about a clinical impact on somebody, absolutely, it's something that needs treatment. But there are various levels of depression as well. And so when we're talking about getting somebody treatment for depression, is that something that they can treat from, you know, a peer support level or from a community support level, maybe with a community therapist or a guidance counselor or something like that? Or is it reaching that next level where they need, you know, a professional therapist or, you know, more medical treatment with pharmaceuticals and things like that?
It's mentioned in the film, for example, that you know, someone says, well, we knew there were challenges, but nobody picked what they were going through as being especially trying. Is that common? What their family member was going through as being especially trying, even though...
I think sometimes when we're looking at someone we might have lost to suicide, we didn't really know what was going on in their life. So maybe someone viewed it as not particularly trying to them, but it was to that person. Why it's so important, like Ashley said, to ask the question clearly and directly about suicide and to check in and make sure that they're doing okay and to get them connected with resources in the community if we can.
Okay. We might rule out any single factor, but there are some common problems that contribute to suicide, at least statistically. These are looking over a large population, certain things seem to recur. The top five in frequency are troubled relationships, substance use, physical health, financial, and legal problems. What are the things you seem to be seeing most often? They might not be part of these. Go ahead.
I think that all of those are certainly risk factors that we look at. that, along with history of any kind of mental health issues in a person's past or anything like that, any kind of trauma history, things like that, we definitely take into account. Any current isolation or disruption in relationships. I think that when people are feeling isolated or disconnected from their larger support network, their risks really drastically increase at that point. And I think dealing in a rural community, in a very rural setting, you know, that risk of isolation is really high for people in the UP.
It's also the case that when they examine a lot of crisis situations like this, the crisis that seems to be leading, you know, that may have led to suicide seems to happen either a couple of weeks before or a couple of weeks after. Is that terribly relevant?
I mean, I think we all need to be talking about, you know, what are the challenges in somebody's life? And again, kind of going back to what is that person's individual perception, not okay. What is our perception of that?
Gotcha.
And saying, you know, is this person withdrawing, or is this person having, you know, some big behavioral changes? And if they are, reaching out to that person and really, you know, asking, again, the question, are you feeling suicidal? And, you know, really getting to the point so that we can get that person the resources they need if they are having a suicidal crisis.
Okay. I'd like to take a moment here to remind our viewers and especially our radio listeners that we're talking about suicide and prevention with Marquette County Health Department health educator Sarah Derwin, Pathways Community Mental Health Outpatient Services Supervisor Ashley Genema, and Dial Help Rural Coordinator Christine Putz. The main suicides and the survivor in the documentary are male. Although we do learn that some mothers and a sister in the film had attempted suicide at some point in their lives, perhaps more than once. The figures show males are more susceptible, while females may be very susceptible where mental illness is involved, more susceptible in that case. Do we know why this is the case? Is it something having to do with male culture or access to firearms, or what do you think? Why are males more susceptible? They're males more susceptible and more successful in most cases.
Do you want to speak to this? Or?
Well, I think one of the trends we used to see is that males tended to pick more lethal means when it came to suicide, mm-hmm. and females had a tendency to pick means that weren't as lethal. So a male might pick a firearm, and that's pretty lethal if you mm-hmm. If you try to suicide. Whereas females tended to pick things like prescription pills, where there was a little bit of time to get some help there okay. and to call for help after. So we had kind of seen those things before, mm-hmm. But I'm not so sure about the rest of the question. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think that statistically, when we're looking at, you know, suicides, men are more likely to die by suicide. And women are more likely to experience mental illness or symptoms that we would treat as mental illness.
Okay.
But I think in either case, when we're looking at the statistics and some of those numbers, it's important, again, to treat every situation as individual. And so while some of these statistics might help guide us in what we look for in our friends and family or loved ones, acquaintances, I think it's important that we treat every person as an individual person when we're saying, should we feel concerned about this person right now?
Okay.
Because everybody's risk factors are going to be different in their lives.
So. The special interest of the Upper Peninsula, part of the reason I mentioned that, may be the fact that firearms are the chief method preferred by males. So the access to firearms is considered a big risk factor where we live. And this all was generated, I think, out of an attempt to expand this mental health picture, or not mental health, public health picture, to include firearms. The overwhelming number of firearm deaths are suicides. What and how firearms should be widely available is debated to this day. But how does one address that risk as a crisis worker or family member? This is dangerous stuff.
We, you know, in a lot of our education, and we work with a lot of medical offices and any other type of group, we call it means restriction education. So basically, our take-home message with that is that if we're worried about somebody, we want to put some space between them and a lethal means. So typically, that's going to be a firearm. Up here, we know that...
The way a policeman would answer a domestic crisis, in a way.
Correct, yeah. So
remove
them
from where it might be.
And we always say it's not as much a controversy, like you said, about, you know, are guns good, are guns bad, but the statistics of what we know is if somebody is suicidal, they should have a lot of space between them and a possible firearm. So it's just temporarily, in some cases, we can say it's knowing how to have that conversation of temporarily doing that. So if you had somebody like a medical provider, for them to just talk to their patient or their patient's family and say, is there anywhere we can store those hunting rifles for a couple weeks or a month, just to get them out of the way. So we've had good buy-in with that. We've also known that people didn't know how to have that conversation, or it didn't occur to them when they were working with patients or clients in not necessarily a mental health setting, but in any other type of like patient setting.
Yeah.
So it's been a really good opportunity for us to give some education on means restriction education.
Okay. There are individual prevention steps identified by the CDC, and there are state and community steps. Now, the individual approach is to help someone at risk, is to engage them and ask if they're in trouble, then keep them safe, be there for them, that is, stick around, help them connect or reconnect to family, and that could be friends in the community too, and follow up. Your observations on these? What seems to be the toughest one to get people to do with any kind of consistency? Go ahead.
To ask clearly and directly about suicide.
About suicide.
Asking someone, are you going to do something silly? Are you going to do anything to harm yourself? Is not the same thing as asking someone clearly and directly, are you thinking about suicide?
Okay.
And we do know from all the research that we have, if you ask someone that question, they're less likely to die by suicide. You're not putting that idea in their head. We have some folks who think, well, if I say the word suicide, they're gonna go home and kill themselves, and that's just not true.
Okay.
But that clear and direct ask is so, so important. It can really save lives.
Absolutely.
What do you say, Ashley?
You know, I think that that is the biggest hurdle.
Okay.
And then trying to really connect people to the appropriate resources in the community. So okay. I think when people are having suicidal crises, it can be very scary for friends and family members. And so, you know, just knowing that linking to the appropriate resources and really being there to walk with that person through getting access to those resources into that, you know, office, that clinic, that doctor, wherever it is, and helping them is so crucial in helping somebody through a suicidal crisis.
Something I see mentioned all the time, but never seems to come up in these official lists, is telling someone how much you care for them, how much they'd be missed, how much they mean to you.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's about just really helping that person move away from that isolation and that those feelings of helplessness or hopelessness, and into, you know, finding a reason to walk back into life and want to live again. And that's really what it's about.
We'd mentioned the programs in Ishpeming and Gwin. These are some other recommended prevention steps at the state and community level coming up, but I wanted to talk about education a little bit. How far have we come in teaching coping and problem-solving skills in school, these kind of things? We expect so much of schools and teachers as it is now. You wonder if you can do it.
We do. You know, it's always been reassuring to me of how well our school districts work with us, especially here in Marquette County. We've had a lot of open arms as far as, you know, please come in, talk with our students. Students have done suicide prevention gatekeeping trainings at many of the schools, and they just have it set up in their health class. All incoming freshmen at many of our high schools will receive a gatekeeper training. Some of our good news, too, as far as early education, is that if any schools are doing substance abuse prevention education, that is also the same as doing suicide prevention. So teaching coping skills, a lot of the risk and protective factors you can see are very similar.
Yeah.
So we kind of call it a twofer if we know a school might not specifically be doing suicide prevention, but they're doing substance abuse prevention. That makes us feel good to know that they are getting taught maybe coping skills and some other things in that educational setting. So even though the schools are busy, they have still you know, let us get in there, I think they realize how important it is and how some teachers may not feel comfortable with it. So going through a training, giving a little practice, the level of confidence really increases after that.
All right. In terms of the community level, a lot of these steps may mirror the ones previously, like identify and support people at risk of suicide, providing financial support to individuals in need, easing unemployment and lack of housing, and expanding options for temporary assistance. Is this, it seems like we've got an awful lot of resources out there working. What would that mean if we were to improve any of those factors right now in the UP? Probably a big commitment, right?
I mean, I think at least, you know, in the Marquette area, we do have a lot of programming and a lot of support for people who are seeking housing or seeking financial assistance.
Yeah.
And so, you know, as far as improvements go, I think, you know, we could always use more of that kind of stuff. Absolutely. Because we have people in our community that are struggling with those things and struggling to seek treatment for maybe mental health issues or other, you know, substance use disorders because they don't have their basic needs met. But I think as a rural community and, you know, that we do a really good job of helping folks to access resources.
One of the objectives here to strengthen access and delivery of care, you've certainly been doing that. I guess the question is, are we getting the support we need on an inpatient level and an inpatient level?
Like from a psychiatric hospitalization mm-hmm. level? Nationally, there's a shortage in psychiatric beds. And so, you know, we always struggle to find beds for people who are in that critical crisis where
drive them out of the region.
We absolutely do, typically.
Yeah.
You know, we have some beds at UP Health Systems Marquette mm-hmm. That we can utilize, but we don't have a youth psychiatric unit anymore. And so any youth that are experiencing a suicidal crisis would have to be taken out of the area should they have to be hospitalized. But I think as a community, we work really hard to resource those folks as best we can when they are in that crisis so that we can prevent them from going out of the community,
mm-hmm.
Youth and adults alike, or so that we can get them back and in treatment and connected to the things that they need as quickly as possible, because we don't like having our people out of the area. We like them being at home.
Okay. I think we're out of time. We've been talking about suicide and prevention with the Marquette County Health Department, Sarah Derwin, Pathways, Ashley Genema, and Dial Helps, Christine Putz. I just want to thank you all for being here. Okay?
Thank you for having us.
I'm Bill Hart. Thanks for joining us on Media Meet.